And now I'll do my impression of Jesse Owens. Talking about the reported survivor of the Battle of Little Bighorn. And kind of a funny line in the movie Blazing Saddles when Cleavon Little said that the Sioux were open for business. They were, oh, me, funny stuff, funny, funny stuff. Okay, you were contacted by phone several years ago to do a piece that you ended up not doing. And start from the word go. Tell us this wonderful story, Eddie.
Well, there was a situation. A judge Wims, said that his family had been judges in Arkansas since there was a state of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a history there. He and his committee called me and asked me if I would do this sculpture of this Civil War soldier, a Confederate. And I told him before we started on this sculpture, because I was invited to Alabama once to also do a Civil War piece, and it was kind of like guess who coming to dinner.
Or as Buddy Holly said when they opened the curtain at the Apollo Theater, he said, well, we weren't expecting y'all either.
Well, it was almost that way, and they were very nice, and gave me a ticket back home. But a nice dinner and a ticket back home.
Right.
But this having that experience, when Judge Wims asked me if I would do this Confederate sculpture for him, I told him that, I said, before I waste your time and before you waste mine, I say, do you realize I'm black? And Judge Wims said, well, you were black when we saw you on CNN. We didn't think that you hadn't changed yet. So, and he said that if you can bring as much life to our sculpture as you did that one, he said, we'd be honored for you to do it.
Right.
And it was going to be one of the largest Confederate monuments in the nation. But that went by way of the Albatross because of Clinton.
Right.
And a few civil rights groups up there that didn't want it done.
You got an interesting call from one of the civil rights leaders.
Yeah, he asked me not to do the piece.
Is it Williams? Was it Williams? Jose Williams that
yes.
made the call?
He said that he didn't want me to do the piece, he said, because they were trying to get the stars and bars out of the capitals at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And my comment was that he had to understand that the stars and bars was just a battle flag.
It wasn't. It was never the flag of the Confederacy.
I said it wasn't a flag. Yeah, and that's what I explained. I said it was just a battle flag to differentiate one piece from the other, one side from the other. And I told him I wasn't a politician, and that you can't change history regardless. And I told him that the stars and bars says you have to understand that flag. Even the Union flag, I say the flags never hung or lynched anyone. I said it's the people you have to change, not the flags. And so he told me at least Judas got 30 pieces of silver. I told him what they were paying me, I could buy Judas and his silver.
That's right.
But anyway, make a long story short, we decided we weren't going to do the piece. Because there was going to be a demonstration concerning it. There were several other things that just didn't set right with me either, because there was some land that had been in this family for generations. They were going to annex this land to put this monument out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think it was right. I didn't think you should. It's not right to take a person's land. I mean, though we don't own it, we lease land. You know, you pay your property taxes, and if you think you own it, stop paying your taxes.
Right. You find
out who owns the land.
Right, absolutely. You know, it was interesting, the conversation you had with Mr. Williams. You asked him about some of the problems in the inner cities and why weren't they more concerned about addressing some of those issues that are so rampant in some of the larger cities today. and he didn't want to discuss any of those topics.
Well, they didn't want to address that, but that was very important. We're slaughtering each other like cattle, and it has to stop somewhere. Someone has to get in and lead or instruct, or not instruct, but educate people again. Give them a sense of value, so that their priorities are not on slaughtering and killing each other. But then when you want to look at it from the inner city perspective, you know, we look at it from our own government doing the same thing, but they do it on a larger scale, you know.
Eddie, has President Obama wasted an opportunity to bring this country, all people in this country, closer together?
I think he has. I think he has. I think when when he was running, and a lot of the people put their hope on what he said. He said he would unite and he would bring it all together under one united banner, and we would all be Americans. And it didn't. And matter of fact, it didn't happen that way at all. It seemed as if, though, now there has been more division than it ever has been before. I mean, not ever before, but then you have to consider Woodrow Wilson. He made it worse than anybody ever in the history of the world.
Idiot.
He set them back, set segregation and integration back about 100 years. He put it almost back into the plantation.
Right.
But that was Woodrow Wilson. He caused the division, but he was blatant with his. He just came out right and said that you couldn't be integrated. And no white should ever serve under a black in any position. People tout him as a hero. I don't know why. He was anti-Semitic and everything else. Semite. He was anti-Semite. And he also had one fatal solution for any Hispanic crossing the border. He felt that they should be killed, not incarcerated.
Nuts. just nuts.
But... yeah, we're having a problem. We're having these problems, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be resolved anytime soon. And we shouldn't play on opportunities to cause division. People have to understand that if we're going to make it anywhere in the world again, if it's not too late for us, we're going to have to do it united. We'll never make it alone or divided now. We must be united. And it seemed as if, though, it might be a little late.
You know, I'm afraid that you might be right. I don't know how you bring it back from the brink. And I'm not sure we haven't already gone over the brink.
Well, yeah, that's true. Not only are we haven't time to concern ourselves with race relations right now, we're trying to survive. Everybody's trying to survive. Get that daily bread. You don't know what tomorrow holds. Jobs have gone offshore. We laughed at some of the individuals, the politicians earlier, like Perot, when he said, be aware of NAFTA. I can't understand how a politician can tell the people that we're going to send you jobs overseas, but it's going to be more money for you. And the people listen to the lies.
Right.
And they bought into it and
believed it.
And it didn't make any sense. So for the simple fact, how are you going to give me a job and you send it away?
Right.
Now it's escalated. There are no jobs here anymore. And I feel bad for the kids that are graduating from colleges now.
Right. Let's go to the phones and talk to HR this morning. Good morning, HR. You're on the Hasty program.
Well, good morning. I just want to just say I'm really enjoying listening to you guys. I'm 48 years old, and your generation has been a blessing to me. And I just want to make a comment on what he said. I think he said Woodrow Wilson. Is that who he said?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the things that I really want to point out, I don't look at presidents anymore. You got to look at the people. You got to look at the people and who they elect. Every politician is a reflection of the people. Obama has been elected twice. he's not much different than he was the first time. So I just think that the people have the problem, such as when Mr. Wilson was president, it was the people. So I just think we ought to be careful with the president. They only represent the atmosphere of people, and I really do appreciate you guys and your show. Okay?
Well, HR, I will say this. We get the kind of government we deserve.
And that's exactly right. Right. You said it better than I could ever say it.
HR.
Yes, sir.
At the time that Wilson came in, it was very close to a dictatorship.
Right.
And he had a lot more clout than the president does today. See, the president today probably is more or less a figurehead rather than anything else. But at the time that Woodrow Wilson came in, that was as close to royalty as you could get, because they felt that those individuals that had come from Ivy League were supposed to rule, and they had a group that that rallied behind these individuals. So at that time, the president did have a lot more clout, and he could dictate the mood of the nation, because during the period of time that Woodrow Wilson was president, there were more lynchings and hangings than they ever had in the history of America.
Absolutely.
Right. You're right about one thing, and that is that the president now, he's just a puppet. That's true, but like I said, in the things that Obama done in his first, if you take some of the subliminal things that he said with Joe the Plumber, some of the things that his wife said, and we should have known he was going to be a divider. And I talked to somebody the other day, and I know you got a break coming up, but I was talking to a guy the other day over at Caroline, and he was talking about, boy, look, we really got it going on now. And I asked him, I said, do you really think things have gotten better? They didn't give me an answer.
Right.
So it's gotten tougher, and I think that if you've got a brain in your head, you can see that. But anyway, I appreciate you.
Good point, HR. Thanks for the call.
HR.
Absolutely.
Thank
good
you.
Call. We've got a caller on the line, too. Bobby, I hope we got to take a break. If we could get Bobby to hold on for the break, and we'll be back in a moment with more of the Chad Hastie Show. Bobby, thanks for your call. If you can hold on through the break, we'd appreciate it.
Save more, spend less, and avoid ripoffs with me, Clark Howard. Weeknights 10 to midnight on 790 KFYO.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Chad Hastie program. Sorry about missing Bobby's call. Bobby Cox had called, and we dropped his call. If we can get Bobby back on the line, be great. We're talking about a lot of things this morning. We started out talking about the Oil and Gas Committee, of which Eddie Dixon is a member, recently appointed by the City of Lubbock. There's going to be a preliminary report today on the findings so far of your committee, Eddie. Zach Brady has been appointed chair of that committee. I guess it's kind of just a supplemental report to the city council that you guys are moving forward and doing your, you know, taking the charge from the city council and doing what you've been asked to do. And
that's correct.
Right.
That's correct.
But you're... it appears to, from talking to you, now, of course, you know, I'm not smart enough to put words in your mouth, but you've pretty well come to your own conclusions about this issue, as best I can understand from talking to you.
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much.
And but it did take a lot of research on that issue. We've also been talking about race relations and how that I think that our second black president, of course, you know, a lot of the black civic leaders, community leaders around the nation said Clinton was the first black president. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
And but anyway, we talked about how, in our opinion, that the current president, Mr. Obama, has missed a great opportunity to bring about a lot of healing in this country. As a matter of fact, many people feel like the exact opposite has happened, and I'm one of them. 1-800-687-0790 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. We haven't had an opportunity to take many calls this morning, but we appreciate the calls we have at 770-5790. 770-5790. many years ago, I guess I had an interesting upbringing, Eddie, in race relations.
Well, yeah, you had a lot of interacting do it in your younger.
Right, and it's years. So I've had a kind of a strange view, according to some folks in my community, about race relations, and I want to. I'll tell you in a moment here. It may be after 10:30 because I think we've got some calls coming in. But I want to relate a story about a gentleman who basically had a major impact in my life as I was a young child down in Northeast Texas on the banks of the Sabine River. And I want to tell you and share with the audience in a moment the story of Uncle Aaron Washington. A gentleman that had a great impact on my life as a young man. But regardless of that, there's an awful lot of difficulty in our country right now as far as race relations, and I'm not sure that it's getting any better, are you?
No. No.
It's sad, isn't it? Absolutely heartbreaking.
But
well, we've got some phone calls that are lighting up. We're going to try to get to those in just a moment. Let's go. We ready, Ronnie, with the phones? Let's go to line one and try to pick up Bobby again. Bobby, sorry we missed you a moment ago. You're on the Chad Hastie Show. Good morning.
Sorry, there are about four of us in West County that have cell service, and I finally found another one.
I understand.
I wanted to get back to Woodrow Wilson and all the things that he did. People understand how insidious his reign was. I'd like to talk about the concept.
We're losing you.
Yeah, you're dropping out again, Bobby. Try that one more time. Yeah. Start over.
I'd like to talk about the constitutional amendments that Woodrow Wilson got rammed through the states, and the income tax, the reordering of the Senate, and my personal horror is prohibition. In other words, all of these things were done under his power, his auspices. He was a very, very powerful president and really didn't like this country and really didn't like the principles that we were founded of, and did affect a large amount of change that was extraordinarily detrimental to the nation.
That's true.
Absolutely. Good call. And great points.
Yeah, and remember, he also sold us out to the Federal Reserve.
Right, which is really not a Federal Reserve. It's a group of – it's more private than it is public. When you say the Federal Reserve, everybody thinks that it's
a federal
government,
but
it's not federal at all. Bobby, thanks for the call. Sorry you had to try again, but we appreciate it very much. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Gail, who is on line two. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Paul. First of all,
good morning, Gail.
Hi, Eddie. Eddie, do you mind if I pass a compliment to Paul first?
Yes.
Paul, I'm going to do it anyway. Paul, you are missed on the city council. I appreciate your common sense and your integrity, but that's a subject for another call.
Right.
I'm here to validate a lot of what Eddie is sharing with the group today. My husband and I, through our firm, House Bronze Incorporated, were privileged to work with Eddie for, Eddie, validate this for me, was it over 30 years?
Yes, and it's been family.
Yes, and Eddie started, we remember, when he had his butter knife. And how he emerged as a world-class sculptor. Eddie, Jerry passed 4 years ago yesterday, but he always enjoyed, as did I, working with you and appreciated the way that you progressed
right.
And that you wanted to learn and do to perfection.
Gail, can we hold you on? Because I'd like to keep you in through the break. We've got a hard break we've got to get
I'll
to
stay
right
on
now.
The line.
That's great. Thank you very Gail. Much. This is the Chad Hasty Show. I'm Paul R. Bean with my guest, Eddie Dixon. Welcome back, everybody, to the Chad Hasty program. Gail House has been hanging on through one of the longest breaks that we have on the Chad Hasty program. We certainly hope that she's still there and hasn't dozed off. Good morning, Gail. Thank
Good
you
morning.
For sticking through on the break. Well, and you were talking about our friend Eddie Dixon.
Yes. Eddie progressed into what we considered one of the finer sculptors in the nation, and he does have a world-class following. But I want to talk about, in addition to the fact that we were privileged to work with him on our last sculpture with Eddie before Jerry passed, and that's the Willie McCool sculpture here in the city at Memphis and 82nd. There are, I think, several others. But what I wanted to pass on to the people about Eddie. Eddie was asked to be a speaker to conduct a class for one of the honors class at Texas Tech University. He elected to bring that class out to our facility and deliver one of the finest lectures I've ever heard. Not only were the class members mesmerized, but so were Jerry and I and our staff. And Eddie has many talents that this city needs to recognize. They have in some ways, but not everybody knows about Eddie Dixon and his talents. And I can speak to that firsthand.
That's a great call, and thank you, Gail, very much. It's great to hear from you. Thank you for taking some time this morning to talk about our joint friend, Eddie Dixon, who's our guest this morning. Thanks, Gail, very much. Great phone
My
call.
My privilege.
Thank Gail, thank you. You so very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Eddie, the North and East Lubbock Community Development Corporation is an operation that has tried mostly unsuccessfully for years to develop North and East Lubbock. It's no secret that they've had very, very limited success. Now, the past chairperson is a former mayor, David Langston, but the current chairperson is a nice young man named Thomas Harris III. You know Thomas? He's the assistant to Becky Garza. And he works at City Hall in the city secretary's office. He's the assistant city secretary. Yeah. He's fairly young. He's a young black man. And a lot of people don't know, and this is kind of a little sidebar, a lot of people don't know that Thomas is a weightlifter and a bodybuilder. And his middle name is Hercules. It's Thomas Hercules Harris III.
That's his true name.
That's his true name. What I understand is his true. He's a good guy. But this North and East Community Development Corporation, which David Langston pulls the strings in this organization, they're having their champions banquet on September 24th at the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center. And they're honoring people who've made a difference in North and East Lubbock and the development of North and East Lubbock. They're honoring Victor and Floyd. Now, I don't have much of an issue with Floyd because my friend Floyd still lives in East Lubbock, in basically the same house where he's lived for many, many years. But I noticed that a lot of these people that have served on this board, well, live in North or East Lubbock. The North and East Lubbock Development Corporation is always looking for money. And so they are losing some grant money, I understand. So they're going to be looking to the city council. I guess they're trying to ensure two votes for some tax money to continue their work over there in North and East Lubbock. I don't think they can point to too many things that have been successful over there. I know several years ago, while I served on the council, I attended a groundbreaking for a little strip shopping center over there that was financed by a Lubbock physician, a Lubbock doctor. And last time I checked, it was still vacant. Nobody had moved in over there. So, but anyway, my commentary coming up today at 1:30 here on the KFYO during the Rush Limbaugh show, I'm going to talk about the North and East Lubbock Development Corporation. You know, we touched on race this morning. And I want to talk about that in just a moment, but we need to go back to the phones and go to line one and talk to Brian about problems in North Lubbock and East Lubbock. Good morning, Brian. You're on the Chad Hastie program.
Good morning, guys. I just wanted to mention, several years ago, Lubbock done a embankment project on about 68 homes over in the North and East Lubbock area. And I done work on probably 40 of the houses over there. And what we found was the largest problem was we went in there and completely gutted them houses out to just the bare frame. And then we went back in and started to put in all new sheetrock, fixtures, flooring, and everything back in them. And these houses were getting tore up and destroyed faster than we could rebuild them. We had to put 3/4-inch plywood over all the windows and doors to keep people out, to keep them from destroying the houses before we could get them redone. Sewer lines in the backyard, we'd lay new sewer lines, and before we could tie them into the city, they had to be inspected, and then the city would come tie into them, and they would throw bricks in the end of the lines and shake the brick back up into the sewer lines so that we would have to pull the lines loose and do them again. And we just had so much hassle over there with trying to rebuild and keep up with what was getting tore up that it just wasn't profitable to us anymore. And that was I've never bidded anything over there since because of that.
I just wish people would realize that elected officials cannot tell you where to live. People are going to live where they want to live. There's right. People that have lived in East Lubbock for generations. There's been generations of Lubbock residents raised in East Lubbock. They continue to live there. They continue to keep their homes up. They enjoy living in their neighborhoods. They're close to their churches. And until just a few years ago, Eddie, they were basically close to their community schools, their neighborhood schools, of which they wanted. There's been an attack recently by LISD on neighborhood schools. They're tearing down right now one of the most successful schools right over here in South Lubbock at May Murphy. So I don't know. I think that when you start trying to force development in one area, I think you're on shaky ground.
Well, you know, I
Brian, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Good point. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Brian. I don't know Brian's experience, but I know that when we were where Dougalville is now,
right?
The city. I mean,
North
the,
Overton.
Yeah, North Overton. We call it Dougalville. Anyway, North Overton, before when we were in working on our degree in engineering out there, a couple of buddies and I, we were refurbishing the houses, bringing them up to code. Mm-hmm. Well, we had the same problem over there. Anytime we had the houses finished, waiting for the city to come in to inspect them, come back, and they were almost totally destroyed. But that happens anywhere in the city.
Right. You know, there's more copper theft in Southwest Lubbock than there is in Northeast Lubbock.
Yeah, so.
And I tell people, you know, people say, well, you do have an interesting a take on race relations, and it's because of the way I was raised and in this situation where I was raised. And I tell people all the time, because I think it's amazing that some people view me in Lubbock as a racist.
Oh, how?
I don't know. They can't explain it to me, but I mean, there's been a couple of people. I served with one person on the city council.
Maybe because you're from Alabama.
I'm a Texan born and bred, but my grandpa was from Alabama. My other grandpa from Georgia. But anyway, I don't understand that, but we'll talk about relationships
Paul,
in just a moment.
Paul, not just flattering you or anything like that, but you're the least racist person I've ever met.
Well, I've always thought of myself as being colorblind, but it's interesting. You know, I tell people, we've got to take a break, but I tell people this. I sat down one time, Eddie, and I made a list of the 10 worst people that I've ever known in my life. They were all white.
Yeah.
And I told somebody that one time, and they said, well, that's because you don't have any interaction with any other people. I said, the hell I don't. I said, my golf group on Saturday looks like the United Nations on the number one tee. You know, we got black folks and brown folks and white folks but anyway, more about that in a moment. Let's take the break here on the Chad Hasty Show. We may be in a little bit over our heads this morning. I'm Paul Bean, along with my friend Eddie Dixon.
News Talk 790, KFYO.
We're back. The final segment of the Chad Hasty Show for a Tuesday. And our guest this morning has been Eddie Dixon, a man that I was fortunate enough to meet several years ago, and a man who graduated Texas Tech, Vietnam veteran, a man who is one of the great American sculptors in our country today. And it's a man who has lived in Lubbock for many, many years, and he really does a great job, and he's a great guy, a real conservative Vietnam veteran. But anyway, he's my friend, and I'm happy he was here. I wanted you to stay at least for 30 minutes or 45 minutes this morning, and I know you need to get on the road to Amarillo, so I've helped you here way beyond what I had originally asked you to do, and I appreciate that, Eddie. I really do. You know, it's interesting. We've been talking about race this morning, and it is really, really tough. I guess we need to go back to the phones right quick. Let's talk to Frank Gutierrez this morning. And Frank is a guy that we both know. Frank, good morning. You're on the Chad Hasty Show.
Good morning, Paul, and good morning, Eddie.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm great, and wanted to say welcome home, in case nobody ever mentioned it to you. I wanted to, if you remember in our conversations, I shared with you that I did a tour in 1968 with the 25th Infantry Division.
Right, right. I remember.
Yeah, when did you serve your tour? And I know that you were hurt over there. And I don't remember the details, Eddie, but I think that our listening audience would benefit from that, because not only are you a conservative, but you're also a patriot, and you're a hero in my mind. And I know that's not an easy term for us to use on each other, but at the same time, you're combat decorated, and that speaks highly of you already. And now you're a world-renowned sculptor, so I congratulate you, my friend, for having achieved all of that. And again, I just wanted to know who you did your tour with and what year that was.
Great call, Frank. Thanks for the call this morning.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. You bet.
I served with the 101st Airborne Division. I guess after I got over there, I guess they went airborne, air mobile, because we weren't jumping anymore. We were moving by helicopter.
Right. No place to land over there.
No place.
In the canopy.
I served in I Corps. And if you're familiar with that area.
Right.
And I went over in 68, 69, and part of 70.
Now, where did you go to air? Did you go to jump school at Rutgers?
Fort Benning.
Benning in Georgia. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's the least amount of altitude that you have left a perfectly good airplane hoping to hit the ground with a full chute?
Well, generally, when they started out, when you started out in your Fanugi, first earlier jumps, mm-hmm. start out around 2,000, 2,500 feet.
Mm-hmm. And then how low?
And after you become more experienced and you start doing other special operation type jumps, you get much lower, as low as 1,000 feet, you know.
You're on a static line at 1,000 feet, or are you pulling the cord yourself?
No, you're static lining
static at that.
But you can also, if you pull a cord at 1,000 feet, you're in trouble.
Too late, huh?
It's too late. and then those who got the master jump wings, they did the high-low jumps. And that's jumping as high as 25,000 feet.
Right.
That's when you want to get into enemy territory without bringing your plane into that airspace.
Right.
Okay.
Unbelievable show this morning. Thanks, Eddie Dixon, my friend, and thanks for the calls that we have had, and sorry about the calls we didn't get to. This is KFYO, and I'll be back tomorrow morning with the final Chad Hastie program for me. Ysidro Gutierrez on Thursday, and Matt Crow on Friday. I'm Paul R. Bean. It's been great. Eddie, thank you very much. We'll see you around the bend, my friend.
Thank you. It's been a hoot.
Goodbye.